Think about it every night. Every night.
Are we hooked back up, Danielle?
We are hooked back up and recording.
Okay.
We're all set, Richard.
All right, we will resume the regular meeting at this time. Next on the agenda, as amended, was a comment by Mike Murphy.
Thank you, Commissioners. You all know me, I've been around for a few years, I know, I kind of guess I know what's going on here, and I know how you guys function, what red flags are, white flags are. Being a citizen of Harbor and paying Harbor taxes on two properties now, I would say, is I wanted to talk to you about responsibility, one, and then the other is your financial, what's going on with the harbor, what direction I see the harbor going. So I'll try to whip it all in three minutes, but what I'm seeing here is you have a few major, this is called the Basin 2 wall, you need to be rebuilt, have the rocks, quarry put on the wall, reinforce the wall. You have wastewater treatment plant that needs to be built. You have, let's say, boathouse needs to be torn down and built. Now, the common equation here is that when time comes, you need to write a check and pay the contractor who's going to do the job. You need, or you, we must understand that with the contractors come engineers. There's not a contractor licensed contractor that is not having an engineer by his side 24/7 or having them over for Thanksgiving dinner every year. What I'm trying to get to the point on, your PDF file, page 29, what I was reading, I saw a really huge check being thrown out by the harbor, really huge, to EMC. Okay? I think, guys, listen, if Travis is going to go, all men on board, everybody on board, grab your concrete tools, grab your toolbox, we're going to build this, then you need an engineer. But if that's not in the picture, contractors have their own engineers. There's no reason to pay a huge check for your guy to talk to their guy and say, oh yeah, gentlemen, commissioners, it's okay. That middleman is gone. I mean, EMC would be necessary for some things for you guys. Like I said, Travis, you guys want to build from the bottom up, it's a good thing. But I think it's unnecessary at this point to keep them on the table. It just doesn't make any common sense with that. And by taking them off the payroll, this is what you're doing. Contractors who do the job, it's their responsibility. The poor can wipe their hands. If anything goes wrong with that job, it's the contractor's responsibility. You have Jack Atkins in the picture, and something goes wrong with that job, Jack is not going to take the hit, people. He's not going to sit back and go, oh, God, I'm sorry. The port's going to take the hit. So there's a responsibility to all this. And I just want to point out that, listen, anytime you want to write a huge check like that for someone's profession, information, give me a call. I'll give you a discount on it. You know, listen, I don't think it's just necessary at this point that we keep Jack Atkins on. You can't afford it. Money is not what money used to be. And we are in for a couple of tough years coming up. I don't have to tell you guys that. You're all responsible house owners and moved into this. But that's all I got to say about this. Just please reconsider EMC and write in the check that large for 10 months of service. Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to the management report, starting with the October 2022 Safety, Security, and Environmental Report.
Support the staff discussed how to prevent hearing loss and how to reduce noise in the workplace. There was three instances that happened in the month of October. Some bikes were stolen and some items were stolen from a vehicle. Curry County Sheriff had to come in and help a RV park customer out of their site due to non-payment. Four aces and the port came across 74 security issues for the month of October. Monthly inspections were completed for the stormwater pollution control plan. Discharge monitoring report was completed for the third quarter, and that is it. Is there any questions?
Questions or comments? Seeing there, that will move to the Harbor Master report.
Okay. The RV park construction continues. I estimate we're about 20 to 25% complete with the project. The sewer lines are in. Demo has begun, and they'll be starting to run the water line and the electrical line. Our new tenant, Bell and Whistle, is set up and open. Concrete blocks will be placed, continue to be placed at the opening of the walkways when storms are forecasted. The port staff will remove the blocks during breaks in the weather. October, our RV park occupancy was at 27%, which was down 13% from last year. In the marina, staff completed the quarterly dock inspections and made work orders for needed repairs. Repairs included broken water line in the sport basin, cleats throughout the port that needed tightened or replaced. Bank maintenance is ongoing. Staff completed the barge basin area and have moved on to the transit dock location. This is a reminder to the boat owners, weather has started to change, and we ask that owners make it a priority to periodically check their vessels and replace or tighten lines, and please report any damage or areas of concern to the office as soon as possible. Boat launches paid through the launch machine. We had 668 launches. It's 150 more than last year. Bringing our total with November and December left was 4,818 launches. Telehandler jobs, we did 7. Haulouts, 11. Commercial receiving docks. Lease docks are operational with no new issues to report. Craft season is coming quickly. Vessels have started doing their gear work to prepare for the upcoming season. We will work with the dock managers to keep access clear of craft pods until they are ready to put on vessels. So we'll be talking with them and trying to come up with best locations to stage these craft pods where they're out of the way of the trucks and still move back and forth.
Are we still on target for December 10th?
No, I've heard January 15th maybe.
Right. We'll see what happens after the second test, but right now it's 18.6 here. The start has to be 24%.
Okay.
So it's not January 1, January 15th opener.
It's not the mark out, but it's just growth.
As of right now, no.
Okay. Commercial retail, staff completed a new rolling door at the Boatyard shop for where the Pacific Hooker has the door got ripped off in the wind. So we kind of made its own little freestanding door on the outside of the building because there's not much left on the inside of the building to attach to.
Not the doors that failed?
Yeah.
Originally?
Yeah.
And they finally got blown off.
It got blown off and it was just a pile of metal on the ground. So to keep the rain out and keep the gear that they have secured, they needed a door. So we went with a cheap rolling door that's built to, it's all on the outside of the building. So not impacting the inside. Staff went under the deck at the Bluefin Realty over here and removed berry bushes and debris that started growing through the deck. Staff completed 92 work orders for the month of October. Port staff were busy in the boatyard completing 11 haulouts. Two boats utilized the local service of dustless blasting. Both projects were successful. After the work was done, we had a meeting with the owners to go over the pros and cons of the operation and we kind of improve on the plan to keep things contained and the cleanup better. But overall, the dust was blasting went really well. The product was good, and the cleanup went pretty well. So that's good for our tenants and good for our boatyard. Mm-hmm. Office staff, 37 mortgage renewals were completed and sent out on time. Jack and I had a phone conference with the DeFazio team concerning the EPA grant for the wastewater treatment plant. We were assured the grant money has been appropriated. We also were assured the community grants do not expire. So we were kind of told in the beginning that, you know, we had to have it done in a year, and, you know, we had to just beat feet to get this done. We were told that this is not going to expire. The money has been appropriated to us. It is ours. And it's allowing everyone that was appropriated money, including ourselves, to get through the EPA grant process, which they've finally got us to go ahead and start filling out and turn it in. So we bought ourselves a little bit of time and a little bit of wiggle room to not be so under the gun at completing this thing in a year. We commissioned the Art Signs Incorporated to manufacture and install the three fishing charter signs. The estimated completion on that is by the end of December. That's the charter signs that we had approved that Oregon Tours picked up the cost for that for us. Notification was received from HMGP Mitigation Division of the closure of the project of Basin 1, the piling upgrade that we did out here. That total project cost was $370,844.58. Sorry, I said that wrong. $370,844.58. And everybody knows what project that was out here in the sport basin, all the pilings and piling hoops. Kim and I met with Becky Bryant from Business Oregon and discussed FEMA matching funds, loan interest accrual, sale of port property and the use of net proceeds, projects and needs of the port, and dredging concerns. That kind of went, was a lot involved with it, that FEMA was having them rewrite our description to match the hazard mitigation. They had to readjust it for the matching funds where we were going to be pulling from. The loan interest accrual, that was something that is frozen, but got put, it showed, and what they had that we accrued $70,000, $76,000 in interest. We're talking to Business Oregon, and they're working on removing that. Sale of port property and the use of the net proceeds was talking to them about retaining the money from the property sale. The project and needs of the port, that was kind of preparing us to go over our capital improvements plan. And update that with Business Oregon, and dredging concerns of just the ongoing dredging and permitting and the cost just to keep them in the loop of where we're at and what we're up against.
Travis,
yes.
What was the outcome of keeping the funds from the sale property?
We'll be talking about that soon, but we did get a memo that says we will be able to retain that money.
For a specified purpose.
Yes, it's for a specified purpose, so we'll go over it, but we didn't.
I didn't follow what you were doing.
So Business Oregon has given us authorization to keep the full amount we made on the property sale,
okay,
rather
all
than
right,
giving them 80%, but they specified in that memo what we could spend it on.
Okay. The USDA annual audit and annual project update was completed and submitted. I had a conference with legal concerning county culvert issues and the options available. Staff completed and submitted quarterly progress report for FEMA projects 4432 for the third quarter of 2022. Ongoing communications with Terry and SDAO and ongoing communications with Lloyd Whaley and Curry Title and our legal team about the sale of port property. Any questions?
I'm fine. I like this last section. We have not seen that before, and I like that.
I do too.
So do I.
Quick question. Can you ballpark how many haul-outs we do a year?
80.
80? Okay. Is there an average price? Just ballpark.
Now that we've done, we've changed our pricing. You know, our average price of a haul out is probably close to $1,000, $1,000 to $1,200 for being out for about a week.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple questions.
That's in and out plus storage.
In and out plus storing plus your environmental fees. You know, it's about $1,000, $1,000 to $1,200.
And Larry, I see that increasing because of what's going on down in Crescent City, so.
Mm-hmm. What's going on in Crescent City?
Well,
they can't haul boats.
They can't haul
boats.
They can't haul out.
They park it. They park it, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
it's about dredging.
I don't see them getting anything new for a long time. That's my personal opinion on that.
Was that about the dredging issue?
That and a few other things. I won't say, but
all right. Ken, did you have some comments?
Yeah, I have. The FEMA matching fund reimbursement, what is that? How much are we getting? What's it covering?
From Business Oregon, it's the two projects that combined it up. So it combined it out at $980,000 or something like that between the two projects. But being that FEMA has changed us from Category G to Category A, that means our hazard mitigation that we were getting through FEMA goes away. And so we're reapplying through state from state hazard mitigation to get that money. So that requires Business Oregon to rewrite their description to show that the matching will now be for state hazard mitigation and not through FEMA.
Okay.
The matching money stays the same. It's just the description language of.
And that covers the complete match of $900,000.
That's our matching fund, yes, for our projects. We are having to resubmit estimates to state hazard mitigation, which we're doing right now, because we're filling out a new grant process. So December, we're going to come back, me and Jack are, and we're going to talk about what we've kind of had to chop off from our project and fit within our budget, because our matching funds with Business Oregon being, let's say, $1 million, we don't have any more money to throw towards matching funds, so that means our project, you know, at 25%, we can't go over $4 million. So we need to make sure we're staying within that number so our matching funds will cover it.
Okay.
So it is going to chop some of our project off.
So then also explain loan interest accrual.
So the loan interest accrual, so we, our loans through Business Oregon that we pay.
We owe $3.5 million in interest, which has been
frozen.
Yes.
Frozen.
But it hasn't gone away.
But it has not gone away. And that we still have not got an agreement or what that's going to look like.
Okay.
But this was a matter of, they started charging us or telling us we got
$70,000. It showed that we accrued that much, and that was only a month ago when Becky was here. We asked her about it, and we haven't got a good answer yet of why it's there, but they're working on getting it removed. So somebody made an error somewhere, but our interest is frozen. It just made it onto a document with us that we had a discussion with her of why. So she's working on getting us our answer and getting that removed.
We have no written agreement that on the $3.5 million.
No, we don't.
So at any time they could request payments on that. And those all three or all seven of those loans expire in 2025, if I remember correctly.
I think it's 2030.
2030.
Okay.
2030, they expire.
All right.
So by 2030, the principal will be paid off on all of those loans. The question then will be whether or not Business Oregon is going to forgive the interest. They've said they are going to, but we don't have it in writing.
Yes, and they're working through that because after talking with Becky also, I don't think that they can forgive the interest. I don't think that's like a doable thing. So they're working out how you can go through each loan and address each loan interest instead of it all as one, because they can't group those together and do that
apparently, is what she told me from DOJ. The Department of Justice won't let you do that. So
okay.
We're still working on that, and that's just been a long, ongoing process that I know we're trying to work through, but it's a difficult process to work out with the amount of money that we're asking to forgive or figure out some way to make it more affordable for the court.
Right, and as long as we keep maintaining our agreement to keep everything up.
Keep up on our quarterly payments, and we keep up on everything. It's leaving us in the best position possible to have that negotiated.
That's right.
If we miss any payments, all that's out the window.
Yes.
As I recall, wasn't here when all this happened, but what I have heard from a historical perspective is that this interest was not expected at the time the money was received from the consortium. My understanding is they thought those were grants.
I believe that was the thought. I don't know that for sure. The interest has always been this hanging deal that I don't know if anybody ever did account for it coming back as interest. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, irrespective of the history, we're in a situation now where we have a payment schedule and we have an agreement with them to be paid off, and we're paying on the loan.
Yes.
So we're in a much better financial situation than we were before.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions on the Harbor Master report?
No.
Financial report.
Okay. So this month saw a deficit in all general fund programs except the marina. Beachfront RV park reservations have decreased, partly from the timeline of from the time of year and partly due to construction in progress. The commercial retail deficit was a result of submitting the 2022-23 property tax payment to Perry County. The fuel dock sales have reduced by 64% from the previous month. So that's why we have so many deficits. Balance sheet, end of the month, unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $296,790. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $893,979, with total checkings and savings at $1,190,769. October's profit and loss. Total revenue from all funds was $263,718. Our total expenses was $350,323. The net income for October was negative $86,604.
That's fairly common, though, isn't it, in the fall and winter, that our revenues?
When we pay all the property taxes up front, which is a lot of money, and then we get that back over when we get paid from our tenants.
Yes.
Questions?
Yes. Okay. Entertain a motion to accept the management report.
I make a motion to accept the October 2022 Safety, Security, Environmental Report, Harbor Master Report, and Financial Report. That's discussed.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that moves us to action item A. Court manager recruitment.
Okay. So we have had our recruitment. We went through our recruitment with SDAO. We opened it. We had the position listed and open for approximately 30 days, a month. You guys, the board has received the applicants. They were screened from SDAO, and on November 4th, we had an executive session where the commissioners could review the applicants, and now we are coming out of that, and we're looking for a motion to close that recruitment process with SDAO.
I'll make a motion to approve closing recruitment process without interviewing any candidates.
No, second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. I think for the benefit of the public, we should explain that the candidates we looked at, not any of them met our qualifications, our minimum, well, our desired status determination. So we elected to not interview any of them. All right, that brings us to action item B.
Al has a question.
What are your requirements?
Yeah, it's curious.
Well, so FDAO put together a list of, I guess you would call them desired characteristics or desired skills.
Education.
It included education, management experience, familiarity with courts, all that sort of thing.
None of these people had that?
No. Okay. They had qualifications. Certainly, but not that were directly applicable to a court. So we had people with management experience, had people with some experience in running physical plants, bits and pieces of what would have been desirable, but nobody was even really close. We had six applicants.
Okay, thank you.
Were they regionally in this area?
From all over the United States.
Okay.
So we had a pretty long and thorough discussion amongst ourselves about, you know, do we see, and with SDAO, do we see anybody here that we think is going to meet the need, and we didn't. SDAO told us right now recruiting is tough, and that there are three empty court manager positions right now, and they're handling the recruitment for all of them, and they have yet to find anybody come in that court manager. Yeah. So we found out that it's, you know, there's not a huge pool out there to go pick from.
Okay.
So that brings us to the next item, action item B.
Okay, so moving on with that, now we have closed the recruitment program with FDAO. We're going to move to an acting court manager agreement. As we discussed, we're going to have James, our legal counsel, draft a employment agreement, and that will be for a term of 1 year.
For you?
For me.
For Travis.
Right. So during our discussion, as we were going through this, the question came up, well, if we aren't selecting somebody off the applications, where are we going to go? And Travis says, I would be willing to take an acting position. So we felt it was in the best interest of everybody, both the court, the staff, and everybody that's involved with us, to do that and maintain the continuity we've already got. We've got a lot of experience. So that's the decision is we're going to offer Travis a 1 year contract as an acting manager, and then at the end of the year we'll mutually decide what we do from there.
So one of the things we need to discuss while we're in open session is the salary for the position.
Let's take it from the top.
Okay.
So in this contract that we're writing for Travis, or that the attorney's going to write for Travis, it will have provisions in it that if for convenience, meaning at our pleasure or his pleasure, we do not continue for the full year, he will get his job at Harbor Master back. He's not going to lose his job. Secondly, during our discussions, we talked about annual leave and sick leave. He already has, the current employee has a lot on the books. So if we were going to hire somebody new, Our intent was to start them off with 2 weeks of annual leave to give them an opportunity to move and do that sort of thing. So it would be our desire to then have Travis keep his accumulated leave, what he already has on the book. So the question came up about filling the harbor master position. What are we going to do about that? But because we have a provision in Travis's contract, as I mentioned, if for whatever reason other than for cause, if we agree or he agrees he doesn't want to do this anymore, he goes back. We can't fill that position. So what I think the intent would be is to hire an operations supervisor and have them on the books to do most of the supervision of the staff, field staff, and then we'll see about the harbor master position at the end of the year. Travis stays as the port manager full-time, or the official port manager, then we'll talk about the harbor master position. Okay. So then that finally brings us down to salary.
Yes. With what the 10% that I've already gotten for taking this over, and then
before you do that, we should say that when we offered this port manager position out, we put a salary range in there from $90,000 to $100,000, depending on experience. And that's only mid-range salary levels for port managers and origin of comparable ports.
So, $95,000 is what I would like to see in my contract. And I would also like to see the staff that receive the 10%, keep the 10% throughout the rest of this contract while we're moving through this year, and then at the end of that year, as long as everything continues on, that staff can keep that 10% as well. It's going to be a long year, a lot for us to get through. Our office staff is helping me, but our office staff on a regular basis is asked to do a lot. They're asked to cover a lot. I have Danielle, April, and Kim, you know, in there, and they are responsible for a lot of this port operation, and they've been responsible for a lot. They were responsible a lot when Gary was here. Currently right now at 92 is what my salary would be at with the 10%. And I'm asking for additional $3,000 for the rest of the year to make it 95, and our office staff keep what they have. They will forego any raises during our next rate increase, but that's what I'm proposing and what I envision.
Can we discuss that when we do the rate increases?
We can discuss. I'm sorry.
My point is this: if they're going to forego a COLA, cost of living adjustment, which most likely will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7%, then they're netting 3%. So if we do that, they don't make any net gain, realistically, a 3%.
Okay.
So let's just leave them alone,
but I would like them to keep what they have until we discuss it in the next rate season.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So your proposal then, as part of this package, will be 1 year from the date that you sign it. It will include quarterly reviews. It will retain your position. It's vacated for convenience of either us or you. You'll maintain your annual leave balances, and you're requesting a salary of $95,000.
Yes.
Education.
Yes.
Oh, and we have provisions in there that you will provide us with an educational or training plan for you and your staff to get us up where we need some help. Yeah, need help. Okay.
Did we leave anything out, Kent?
The 3 month reviews in there, so
okay.
education. So it always sounds good to me.
Okay.
What about the harbor management? Who's going to be covering that job when you're doing maybe a port manager's job?
Well, it's, you know, this transition kind of crept up on all of us. We're not exactly ready for it. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing out there right now. I'm going to look for a new operations supervisor to get us another person out there to help spread the load. But as of right now, I have to continue being out there and doing kind of both sides of this job right now.
You're comfortable with that?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with it, and I've been doing it, and that's what we need to do to keep moving forward right now.
Essentially, we don't need a harbor master then.
You know, like I said, historically, before I became the harbor master in 2018, we never had a harbor master position filled for quite some time before that. I think there was at one point in the early 2000s, somewhere there prior to me, but the port went a long time without having one. Mm-hmm. And before we hire one and call them our port harbor master, I think we need to make sure they receive the training, and we make sure they're a person we want moving into that title. And I think hiring somebody at an operations supervisor level to get them trained and get them warmed up to what we're doing will allow them to be able to expand and go forward and allow us to make sure they're trained and ready for that position.
So any of the guys that you've got working for you now that don't fill that requirement?
I'll be discussing that with some of our employees to see if that's what they're interested in doing and see if what I'm asking what will fit to what they can do.
So the process will be the normal hiring practices is to write a position description statement and spell out the duties and responsibilities plus the benefits and salary, and then put that out there for recruiting. And I'm assuming that if it goes out for recruiting, any existing employee that feels like they want that job can apply for the job. And then we'll look for anybody else that shows up. That's a pretty normal practice.
We will follow our hiring policy exactly what it is. We have a job description already for an operations supervisor, and we'll just put out an ad and seek recruitments for that just like any other employee hire we would do.
So you would see that fiscally positioned somewhere between your lead man and the harbor master in terms of salary?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Question?
Yeah, do you have any idea what this is going to cost to hire a guy to do this? What is it, managing or whatever he does?
Well, I don't know what the salary ranges are between those
any
two.
Any idea?
I would guess somewhere in the 70,000 range.
It's closer to 60.
60?
What did you start off with when you were harbor master?
At $33 an hour, so it was
$55,000.
It was 70, I think, is what I started at, somewhere around in there. And I was the operations supervisor before that, and I was the lead man before that. So we have our pay rates for what those are.
But since you're going to be pretty busy over here, if I can answer this question. Who's going to be running the yard, you know, the travel lift and everything else?
Same people. I mean, we've been doing it for the last 3 months. We made it through last month through 11 haul-outs. And we have already trained our other three outside guys on the travel lift, and I am working with them to feel more comfortable running it and get them to where they can do it. And I've already started cross training and getting them certified on boats and our forklifts.
Right.
Our telehandler forklifts, just to help ease the load. And you know, I'll still be out there, but I need our guys to be able to get things positioned, set up, and ready and feel comfortable doing it.
So, one of the things that we've noticed here, and you guys know this as well as I do, this port doesn't have any kind of a bench. We've got no backup with the number of employees we have. So, one of the things we've discussed is putting together a training schedule, training needs to try and make sure that the staff we have gets training in areas where we need them, and cross training, and been doing some of that. So we're trying to get some redundancy built into this so that if one player goes down, we've got somebody else that can fill in.
It seems like you've got a pretty stable crew of people working for you.
Our staff is consistent.
they all show up. Our staff is great, and it's what's kept our port going for a long time, and they're dedicated to keep going.
Yeah, do we have any buddy who, on the certification of doing this equipment, do we have anybody that's doing that training or stamps off on it in case you have a legal problem or anything like that?
When we train our staff, they go through United Academy, which is
that's what I'm asking.
They get an actual certificate from the operators. We had a crane company come down and certify our guys for the travel in, so they're all the qualifications of what they're doing.
Okay. They just want to make sure we're legally okay.
Yep. We're putting them through the proper courses.
Okay.
I have one question. We've talked about staff numerous times. You're going back and forth on the pay. Do you have any comments, Danielle, on?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for asking. Thank you.
Fair to say operations supervisor will be doing some of the Harbor Masters current.
They will start producing a report, an operations report that kind of will start taking the place of what I used to give as a Harbor Masters report, and mine will turn more into a port manager report.
So we're hiring in as an operations supervisor. He will be doing job duties of the Harbor Master and working towards the Harbor Master position.
Yeah, he won't have quite all the job duties as a Harbor Master to start with, but they will be asked to come out and be able to run 3 to 5 guys at a time, lay out what's going to be happening, and have a good idea of a comfortable running equipment.
Okay. Are you ready to make a motion?
You want me to make a motion?
If you'd like
to. Okay, motion. Motion to approve the what?
James, did you get everything out of that you needed?
Thanks, Trev. I did. Yes, I did. So I think I've got the terms we need to draft an agreement if the board approves.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else? Motion to approve legal counsel to draft acting port manager agreement between the Port of Brookings Harbor and Travis Webster for a term of 1 year.
Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ted?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to action item C, the RV Park Improvement Project Payment Request Number 3.
Okay, this is for our RV Park Project. The payment is $108,385.77 for work performed August 1st. They have installed the sewer line. They've got their inspection on the sewer line. Our water line and valves have all came for the addition that we've done. And we just did a walkthrough with Reese Electric, and we expect Reese Electric to come in here and start setting pedestals on the first section of the RV park. I've talked to them. Our goal is to get everything, going to the bathroom. Because we really need to get those front row sites, as many of them, open and as possible. So that's the progress we're making coming down. So this is just a third payment request for the payments of the total job.
Question. Go ahead.
Travis, is in this payment, are you repairing the road at all? Are you paving? Is any paving involved in any of this?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, no.
There wasn't enough money for that as well.
Okay. Motion.
I make a motion to approve McCullen excavation progress payment number 3 for $108,385.77 for the work performed August 1 of 22 to October 22nd, 2022 for contract.
October 29th.
Oh, sorry, 29.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to action item D, the survey for semi-annual boring.
So this was some added info I gave you guys about surveyors. This is information that's at our office. We hand out for everyone. I've looked at this a lot, and one of the things I wanted to talk about that came up as kind of an unintended consequence is when surveyors become farther out, or if they're out for a month or 2 months, and we get commercial fishermen coming in here, say, for our upcoming craft season, and they're wanting to get semi-annual moorage with us to build a fish here for the season. You can see some of these surveyors, actually most of them are from Portland. There's one from Charleston. Depending on cost and what it might be, I'm wondering if we might want to take a look at allowing the port manager to make a semi-annual moorage okay for a boat if I inspect it. For a one-time deal in the event that they can't get a survey done here in enough time. I don't want this to be a repetitive thing, but I want it to be to where we're still able to give these folks the opportunity to come in here. Not all the boats are apprised of what our rules are and that we require, you know, surveys. So when they get here and we tell them that, I'm getting some big eyeballs about, we didn't know that, and now they're here, they're planning on fishing out of here. So I wanted to just talk about it and see if we wanted to adjust or allow for semi-annual mortgages to be approved on a one-time basis, giving survey time frames. Joe, do you have, I know Joe's been asked about it, and you know, he's one of them that came and talked to me. There's boats trying to get in here. I put it on the media agenda for us to talk to us about it. I'm not super crazy about amending what we just did. We do have the ability for these boats to pay monthly mortgage, you know, and not have to have the survey. It is more expensive, but you know, they might have to pay for a month, you know, at our rate before they get a survey, before they get semi-annual mortgage. But it's something that came up that I figured we should talk about and get anybody else's opinion on it.
As I recall from our discussion about this, this all went back to the few derelict boats we had in the port. We were trying to figure out what to do about them. And then we decided to go this route to prevent us from getting any more hangar queens dumped on. Historically, have these seasonal transitory boats been a problem?
No.
So these are boats that are actively fishing, that want to come here for a short period of time, fish through the season, and then leave.
Yes.
Okay.
Is this just commercial boats you're talking about?
Commercial boats is what I'm talking about. I think that if we made any exceptions, it would be for all vessels, you know. But the biggest one that comes in is commercial boats that are looking to come here and fish out of here that aren't necessarily prepared for our new rules.
And these were boats that were 30 years old or older, right?
30 years old or older.
These are older vessels.
Travis, you would then be taking the place of a certified surveyor?
No. I would just be approving the vessel at my own knowledge about boats to approve them for a semi-annual moorage. for the duration while they're here for one time. But, you know, if they want to stay here and they want annual mortgage, or if this is going to roll over and they're going to want to do it the next year, then they will need to come prepared for this. But I'm trying not to send both as they come in here and they read this and then turn around and send them right back out, because they're not going to, they can't do it, or things are behind, or you know, whatever the reason might be.
So would you want to add that this one part that says proof of the scheduled survey must be provided?
I think that would be plenty fair. I don't want to get these guys out of having to provide us with a survey, but I do want to be able to get them mortgage and get them started on one in the event that they have one scheduled.
So if they come here and they don't have that proof, then you're just going to have to give them some time to do that. And if they come here and they didn't know.
Well, what I think he says is if they come here and they don't know, he'll go down and look at the boat.
I know that. But
right.
That's
okay, now you can go ahead and moor here on a six-month basis, but you need to get us a scheduled survey. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So all you're doing is you're just, you're preventing them from having to pay a monthly fee until such time as they get
that.
Right.
So what I'm, and maybe I misunderstand, but if you're going to require a survey by a surveyor, and I don't want to lose business either. I don't want folks to go away. I just don't want us to take on a liability where Travis said, oh, yeah, your boat's fine to moor here, and then something happens because he's not certified by a survey. Am I missing something?
Discretion.
That's why the key word has to be working vessel. It can't be just any vessel. It's got to, if we're going to do something like that, it has to be a working vessel. Like the one guy that came to me, he's working, but at the time he couldn't get a survey. Apparently, from what Travis did, which was a good job, Travis, the one guy, Scullerud, who I know, Brian, is out 2-3 weeks. We'll give him 4 weeks just for the heck of it. But if he wanted to work, as Travis said, for 6 months out of here, we couldn't give him mortgage or 6 months mortgage because he doesn't got the survey. So if he had a non-working vessel, no, I don't want to change nothing. I want it just the way it is.
Yeah.
But if you got someone that's going to come here to work for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and he can't get the survey, but he's going to get the survey during that time.
So I think we kind of built ourselves into a little bit of a corner here when we did the original plan, because we weren't contemplating what we were going to do about the availability of surveyors. We did talk about it. So in thinking about this, it seems reasonable to me if somebody wants to come in here and moor their boat, and they can give you a scheduled survey within 2 months of the day they show up, then we should probably go ahead and be able to apply the rules as we would as if they had a survey. If at the end of that 2 month period they don't get a survey, then they either pay the monthly fee or they're out. So that stays within our rules. It just gives them a little bit of latitude, you and them a little latitude about trying to actually get somebody physically here.
Right, and it's, you know, as far as the pay rate of it goes, the semi-annual rate is not the annual rate. We're not going to lock ourselves into a year-long commitment with these people, with whoever it might be that we're working with. A 6 month period gives everybody ample amount of time to schedule it, have the survey done, and be able to at the end of their semi-annual mortgage open them up for the opportunity to be able to do annual mortgage.
But they will have a survey by that.
Mm-hmm. But they will have to have a survey, and this is, nothing will change with annual mortgage. Annual mortgages, you must have a survey to get mortgage.
Would your insurance requirements?
Insurance requirements also.
With abandonment clause? The boats here have to have an abandonment clause on their insurance, right?
No.
I thought that was.
An abandonment clause?
Yeah, in your insurance on the boat.
Port, you must be named additional insured, and you must have wreck removal and wreck removal. I'm sorry, there's nothing per se for abandonment, but wreck removal. Yes.
Okay.
It sounds good. 6 months.
Who is Joe Glasgow? That's a pretty good question. Who's going to monitor the dead bees from the actual workers? Who's going to not get lost in the system? Are you going to have one of the commissioners follow the people that are in for 6 months of the commercial fishermen? Ones that work and ones that don't work is what I'm saying. Who's going to find out who they are?
I don't think it's going to come down. I think by segregating somebody to say you're a working or a non-working boat, I think we're going to walk into a little bit of trouble. I think if we make this exception, it'll be for all boats to keep it simple and see how this works. With all this being said, we see what surveyors are out right now.
Mm-hmm.
We know that these boats can come in here and moor with us for a month and pay our monthly rate and not have to have a survey. There is a part of me that says, you know, if you come to our port and you get told this, we're not telling you you have to leave. We're telling you you can pay for a month. You need to schedule a survey and fall in line with the rules that we have already laid out. It might be a little more expensive for them, you know, to do it that way, but in the same sense, these are our rules. You can call ahead. We have options, and we have ways for you to know what our processes and rules are, and we don't have to change anything.
The alternative for them is they don't get to moor here.
They can at a monthly rate.
That's what I mean. But
well, the other thing, too, is if they know they're coming, these surveyors are out 2 to 4 weeks, so all I have to do is make an appointment. And I don't like the idea of the liability. You go tell somebody they're going to leave. You've inherited liability to this port. I don't want you there.
Right.
That's my thought.
I agree.
That is true.
That's what I'm saying. Just make them pay for a month at full price for a month. They have a month of, if they didn't call ahead, schedule ahead, have this guy wait for them here, you pay a full rate for a month. Within that month, this all goes away.
Or a scheduled service.
Yeah, and well, the way we've been operating it has been working. What we are talking about is an exception to what we've done and kind of leniency and working beyond maybe. The more we've talked about this, I think if we go outside of what we've already established, we're opening ourselves up for something. 2 to 4 weeks out for a scheduled survey. That's not that bad. That seems reasonable to me that in the event that they want to come here, they can pay for a month if they don't have the survey. They can wait for their survey to come, and pending that survey, we can go ahead and proceed with the longer mortgage. But
they can make that appointment wherever they're coming from, too, so they don't necessarily have to come here to have the survey.
Right.
So, I mean, if it's cheaper than Charleston or wherever these guys are located, get the survey done. They know they're coming. That's just
After discussing this more, I really don't feel like we should change what we have.
Question? Go ahead.
Yeah. Are there any other ports that have a similar policy like this in place?
Ports are currently developing policies like
this? No port has established.
I don't know. Do you know for sure?
Not for surveys, I don't know, but I don't know of any other ones that do.
But since we had to acquire and get rid of 40 boats,
the
expense, it's not a bad idea.
Well,
this is applying to new boats. New boats to our harbor. This is a one-time deal for new boats here that want to come here and more. Existing boats don't have to do this. It's what we've seen, and the reason behind this is because increasingly more and more we get boats traveling the coast that are looking somewhere to pull in and create a line of problems for us with abandonment on boats where the port is eating a tremendous amount of that cost.
Well, anybody who has an insurance policy, 90% of the boats, their insurance company is going to require them to have a damn survey done on their boat, or they cannot get insurance. I think you're kicking a can down the road. That you make sure they have insurance. As soon as you see that insurance, they've already had a survey done. 90% of
them. Good. That's fine. That's well, I'd like to agree with you, but I can't. Because we have, not the fishing boat so much, but we have inherited some real disasters here. I'm thinking of that big sailboat we had that showed up here. And, you know, we've had some issues with those very kind of things where they don't have surveys. They have insurance, but that's not seaworthy.
I have found a lot of boats in not great shape, on the verge of abandonment, or a derelict boat that these insurance companies continuously insure, even though they barely float. And they don't ask for a survey, and what each insurance company's policies are for requiring a survey, it varies greatly. But I have seen many boats, especially in sport boats, where these insurance companies will insure them without surveys. And I completely don't agree with it, but that is a huge reason why we have taken an extra step, is because the boats out there, some of them that we had and some of them that have came in here that have left us in pretty bad shape, they don't have surveys.
Well, the boats I've seen come in here, like the Gypsy, when it came in, that thing tied up at our dock, our damn harbor master should have said, Jesus Christ, the damn thing's sinking at the dock. Don't tie it up here. Boom, it's leaking like hell.
So the Gypsy Lee showed up in the middle of the night, and the owners left in the middle of the night,
yeah.
And we never saw them again.
Holy cow.
And it almost sunk by the next day.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't anything due to us not doing it. The boat was dumped here.
Well, let's put a gate out here and don't let them through.
I thought about a good cable, a cargo net across.
Let's complete our action on this. So we have a proposed motion, or we can agree to just not take action on it.
Table it.
Just not take action, I say.
Yeah. No action.
No action. Agreement. We'll just not take action.
I agree.
So the current policy stands. Great. Okay, that brings us to information item A, Health Hazardous update, and that is this piece.
That is that. I just received that. So I've looked over, actually I had Danielle look into what other rates are for asphalt. If they have it there, they are across the board, just depending on what you're utilizing them for. For this meeting and what we have here, I wanted you guys to be able to see the appraisal report. I wanted you to see what that property is currently worth, and kind of table the asphalt rate changing or negotiation and put that off until our rates come back around, so where we can better look at that and continue them on the current old lease payment that they were paying until we've explored all of our options with moving forward. If we decide we want to entertain selling that property, if we want to continue the lease, this is just more information that I wanted to get out to you guys and talk about, give everybody an opportunity to talk about where they see this landing.
Well, as I read this thing, I was kind of surprised. The comparables that they're using here are not comparable. You know, they're doing comparables on vacant lots, basically, which are obviously buildable, developable. This one is not. So the difference I saw between the appraised value, which is somewhere around $28,000,
$29,000.
This one, the appraised value, $52,000. No, that's not the appraised value. That's the market value. They're different. So they're showing a market value of 13 cents per square foot of 52,000, but that's based on the comparables in Brooklyn at $13 a square foot.
Okay.
So, but we're not taking action on this us anyway.
We're not taking action. This is information for you guys to look at and, have any other discussion with it if there is any questions.
Well, again, we talked about this last time. For me, this particular piece of property is virtually unusable by the port.
Yep.
If we were to use it, we'd take out the entire back of that restaurant. I do feel some obligation. I don't know how this happened, but I do feel some obligation to the business here. If we were to sell them that piece of property, that makes that building and that restaurant operation complete. If we don't do that, then there's always going to be this issue hanging over their head.
Exactly.
Yeah, we will end up with a lot line problem, very similar to what we had with Rigetti's,
right,
but having no setback. So it's just something. So
you don't ever see that valuable for like crab pot storage or dredging storage.
So everything that we have discussed with our strategic plan, our future plans of that area, none of those plans include that section, that 40 by 100 area.
Well, and I don't know what the current county law is, but I know we're going to run into a setback issue.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that's our property, we can't develop it as it is because we're going to have to set back a certain distance, 10 feet or 20 feet, I think, depending on how you look at that. And I don't know about commercial property. So it creates an issue for us. We no longer have that piece to do with either.
You would lose quite a bit.
Well, we'd lose.
From that area, and it's not really very good anyway.
We lose quite a bit of it. So we'll discuss this down the road, but, I just think that having this in our hands is helpful for us to make it more important.
Pretty little.
Okay, anything else on this one?
Not on this one, no.
Okay. That brings us to our last second page. That brings us to the property sale update.
Okay, so the property across the street from the port office, we received the purchase proposal from Lloyd Whaley. Our legal counsel created a purchase sale agreement. The buyer has reviewed and signed it. Court approved the purchase sale agreement. Escrow account was opened, and the buyer's funds were deposited. The last needed document that we have is a reconveyance that releases the lien from Business Oregon.
Right.
I just got word from them that we should see that tomorrow or Friday, and that is our last needed document to complete that sale. So I expect it to be done on Friday or early next week. Also in here with this property sale is what we talked about earlier. With the port being able to retain those funds from the sale. Just to go back over it again, typically on any asset sales, the port is required to pay 80% of it to IFA towards our debt, and the port retains 20% into our reserve fund. Our wastewater treatment plant project that we have coming up is still moving along, and the matching funds are going to be an issue for us to overcome. So one of the things that I wrote a letter to Business Oregon, and I asked with this property sale if we can retain the full amount and put it into our reserve fund to only be used for matching funds for the wastewater treatment plant. If the wastewater treatment plant does not happen or falls through or does not happen, the port still will be required to pay 80% of the $175,000 to IFA.
Yep.
That is what this memo is stating, and the agreement that we're walking into with them.
But we can use it for matching funds.
Yes, we can use it for matching funds.
Okay.
Any questions?
Okay, that brings us to information item C, the awareness campaign for any port projects. I read this pretty carefully. You can have fun with this one, too.
So this one's a little bit, I got an email, and this was something that I just wanted to bring to your guys' attention. This is kind of an awareness of big projects that you have up and coming to put out there. You know, this is what we're doing. I put in some examples. You know, the Port of Cascade Lock, Toledo, when they got their new boatyard building done. It's just an article that gets put out in Oregon Business that sheds light on what we're doing here.
Great.
It is very expensive. And the only project that I could think that this would be, that I felt relative, was our wastewater treatment plant. But I don't think we're at the point yet to put out any type of articles or anything like that promoting it or showing any type of awareness. So I just wanted to make sure that if there was any projects that we're doing that any of the board thought we wanted to highlight in any type of magazine, in particular Oregon Business, I wanted to give us an opportunity to all to talk about it and see if there is.
Well, I've
seen a lot of no faces.
Personally, I would love to do that, but I'm not loving to do that for $3,600 to $7,400.
Right.
That's what the newspaper used to be for.
Right.
True.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, this is a good kind of a little good chop of chops to remind us that some of the stuff is expensive.
Yes. Things are getting so cheap. So with that being said, I think maybe if nobody has any comments on it, maybe when our project gets a little farther down the road and we start seeing our big projects, maybe a FEMA project or a wastewater treatment plant, just keep it in the back of your head that if we're feeling like we want to advertise that better, there is options for us to do that.
Even through that port that we get monthly, mm-hmm. I think it's not quite as expensive.
Well, I would hope if we do a ribbon cutting on this wastewater treatment plant, whatever that is, that the House of Representatives staff can help get somebody like the TV and the Oregonian or somebody like that down here to report on that.
Okay.
That'd be my hope. Yeah. And we should sure talk to them about that one if we ever do, when we get to that point.
Okay. Well, I think we'll just leave it alone for right now, and when we have a better handle on our project, maybe we'll revisit something like this. Okay.
That brings us to the stormwater pollution control plan, 1200Z permit.
Culvert
update. Oh, I'm sorry.
So the county culvert update, just to be kind of quick and brief with it, I'm continuing to talk with our legal counsel about what our options are. We're still pulling quite a bit of information about the development and what the intended maintenance and uses of that culvert was. So I hope to next meeting come back and have another discussion about where we're going to proceed and have our attorneys online with that. Does anybody have any questions or?
Well, just a comment. Be aware that those FOIA requests that we've got in are costing us $40 an hour county staff time to get us the stuff. We don't get those for free. So we're putting out some expenditure here to get the picture cleared up so we know where we're going.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's government.
Yeah.
Government, and you know, this problem has been an ongoing problem for many, many years that has kind of been swept under the rug and not really ever came to any major resolutions with it. So it's kind of our time to look down and see what options we actually have.
I'm glad we're going to try and put a nail in this coffin, because we're just about to spend another close to $100,000 dredging the harbor again and hauling the stuff off. We've got to stop this, right? We've got to get it resolved. And I think we all know what the resolution is going to be, but we've got to take the steps to get to it.
Well, we need some answers and action from them.
$40 an hour is cheaper than them.
I did check on the $40 an hour, and we are paying within
fair rate to get this information.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Thank you for doing it, Chairman.
Travis, last meeting you talked about dredging, and I suggested that you dredge it out to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, quote unquote, that they don't find the soil appropriate enough for the beach. Is there a difference between beach and water? Did you say from the beach you extend the hose 100 yards into the water and then have to drain out the water?
There's no way we can, you can't discharge a mine like that just into the ocean without it being set out by the core. Like, we have an actual dump site that's on, it's on a map, and it's out there, and that's where our dredge spoil can be dumped. And the only other time it's permitted to be dumped into rivers, streams, anything like that, is if it's identified by the core as basically a self-cleaning channel. Like in Bandit, I did dredge in Bandit. You can pump on an outgoing tide into the river because of the flows of the river, and it's self-cleaning, which takes it out. That doesn't bring that material right back up onto the bank. If you put that material out 100 yards out into there, is all it's going to do is migrate over into our channel, which will cause channel problems.
Even if we had the same theory as low tide, high tide?
Even with the same theory, all that material that you would pump in there, even some of the material that gets pumped out into our dump site, you'll still see some of that material even migrate back to our beach, and just because it carries so far. So being almost a mile out, three-quarters of a mile out of the ocean, sometimes that's not even far enough.
Gold Beach, what they pay, $2 million to have that dredged, they couldn't dump on the dredged site. They had to take it to another site that the Army Corps of Engineers told them, which was like 7 miles away. Ridiculous, but yeah.
And they take our site and they will turn it and get to make more room. It kind of swings out there, but one of the things we did in the tsunami was we ran a pipe out in the ocean to that dump site. I was a part of it.
With flag.
And it was a circus, to say the least.
A great surfing spot.
Very, very dangerous, very difficult, navigational hazards like you wouldn't believe, and very labor-intensive to monitor.
Well, that pipe was out there during the October bubble season, for part of it. So you can imagine going out here, you could go, maybe 200 yards south.
Yep.
If you go clear to the end of the pipe and come back down the other side and fish down the rest of the beach, it was
trying to tame a mile of pipe out in the Pacific Ocean during winter is difficult. It is.
You mean to tell me you don't think you could put a...
We chased buoys, we chased blinking lights, we even chased the monitor at the end of the pipe, at the GPS, to make sure it stays within the zone. We chased that thing all over the place. It was very difficult.
Okay. Information item E, Stillwater Pollution Control Plan, 1200 lead permit.
So this is kind of always a moving target. Anytime we do any updates, best management practice updates, staff changes. So we went through with Daniel at Aquarius Environmental and updated our contacts. Removing Gary, adding me, and adding Danielle to it as our secondary contact, and updated our, this is where we updated our ductless blasting. We added that we approved. We did update our fuel tanks to make sure it was correct with the amount of gallons that we're pumping. So just kind of housekeeping with the changes that we've made. And the staff changes.
Who is AE?
Who?
AE.
AD?
AE. So from October 2022 all the way down, rather than Gary, you got AE. Oh, that's Aquarius Engineering.
Aquarius
Engineering.
Okay,
I got it. I answered my own question.
Okay, all right.
Thank you, Daniel, for doing that.
Okay, anything further on that? Any commissioners have comments?
Oh,
I will just comment, we had a PFMC meeting at the beginning of the month, and we talked about salmon fixture. One of the interesting comments that I heard was from the state of California, who said they are finally going to constrain their commercial salmon fishing. They have been fishing, last year they fished 380% over projection. The year before they fished 220% over.
220?
This is the commercial guy. So they're now talking about looking at trip limits, which, according to their representative on the Salmon Advisory Subpanel, would create a failed fishery. And I said, well, I don't understand that Oregon's been fishing trip limits since as long as I've been involved. What's their idea of going out and having a highliner that takes 160,000 pounds of salmon in 2 weeks is what they like. So stay tuned. That will be an interesting discussion. It won't affect us. Won't affect them directly, but it's going to be. And that request came from the state itself. So
is that all species?
Salmon. Chinook salmon.
Yeah. Coho.
They don't fish coho. California has not been able to fish coho since 1992, I think.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. Okay, anything else? Next meeting will be.
We're scheduling a meeting for November 30th, a special meeting for November 30th. It should be for, James has the contract done, and we need to have our annual audit done and ready to be submitted. The audit's the big one. That's what we really need to get done.
What time will that be, Travis?
I'm shooting for 10 a.m.
Okay. Well, until then, we are adjourned.
Goodbye.
Hey, Mike.
You.